Are you ready to level up and achieve peak performance? Let Healing Within help assist you to be at the top of your game. Pair massage and assisted practitioner stretching to be one step above your competitors. Go to healingwithinkc.com to book a session.
Or not, Danny Klinkscale in on this Friday. Let's start things off as we rock and roll through this particular episode with Sal Capaccio, WGR in Buffalo. We saw something that you usually don't see, Sal, during the course of an NFL season, a team in playoff contention benching their starting quarterback. What went into it?
Well, this really is about the offense being limited and giving this team more options and an ability to be more balanced, because as much as Tyrod Taylor does have a really great TD to interception ratio, one of the best all time, actually, for a guy who's played as much as he has a good completion percentage and he can dazzle you with his legs and keep plays alive. The fact is, it's just a limited offense as far as the passing game, and this team cannot move the ball down the field in situations where they have to. They've been down a couple scores lately, early, and pretty much game is over from that point. So this is about getting someone on the field in Nathan Peterman who they believe can make this team a better passing game in 2017, and then that will open up the running game as well.
What was the expectation for Peterman when he was drafted? Was it that he might be the quarterback of the future, or is this just sort of they've discovered something?
Yeah, I think that was it, the first one, that he might be, and you never know. But let's remember, let's go back to this past offseason when there were a lot of questions if Tyrod Taylor was even going to come back. The Bills would not have had him back if he did not restructure his deal to take a lot less money. He did. He bet on himself, and I give the kid a lot of credit for doing that because he could have gone elsewhere. The Jets were interested. Cleveland was interested. But he said, I want to make it work in Buffalo. I think we have a good enough team to make a playoff run. I'm coming back. But the Bills certainly would have walked away, and I think from that and their own behavior in the organization showed that they weren't fully committed to him going forward. They drafted Nathan Peterman. Then they traded with you guys in Kansas City for that number one pick next year, and I believe since day one of that trade that – with two firsts and two seconds next year, this team was loaded up to get possibly their franchise quarterback in 2018. Now they get a chance to see if Nathan Peterman could be that guy, and they don't have to use those draft picks on it. In the meantime, they're going to ask him to get to the finish line here and get to the playoffs for the first time in 18 years.
Well, not getting to the playoffs, at least it would seem, is the Buffalo Sabres. They are last in the Atlantic Division. Expectations any better than that? Is this a surprise, or is this kind of expected?
Well, the expectation was for this team to be a lot better than they've been. This is something that's a work in progress with a new coaching staff. Obviously, you know, there might be some bumps in the road, but this team overhauled their front office and their coaching staff just like the Bills did. They have good talent. They just signed Jack Eichel for that monster deal. He's one of the best players in the game. Mm-hmm. They have Ryan O'Reilly, Evander Kane. This is a surprise that this team is as poor as it is right now. The expectations are much higher. This is a team that's expected to be in the playoffs, but it is still early with new coaching staff, but it's getting to a point where it's not going to be early very much longer. So there are a lot of questions being asked about it, but I don't think anything like the coaching staff. I think obviously they're safe and things like that. I just think that the style Phil Housley wants to play, he does not have those players. They're just a slower team, and he wants to be a fast, quick-paced type of team like he had in Nashville when he was the coach of their defenseman.
And they played 11 out of 18 games on the road, so maybe they can turn things around. Sal, we always appreciate the time.
All right, always good to talk to you, especially when Seren's not around.
Thank you. Man, I'm out in Texas. Man, I'm out in A-Town. And in Atlanta, it is Chris Domino, 790 The Zone, joining us now. Alex Anthonopoulos is the general manager now of the Atlanta Braves as the front office machinations continue to go. Was that in any way a surprise?
Look, in terms of the name, I think obviously Dayton Moore was probably number one and probably number two and number three in terms of the wish list. But a 40-year-old guy who's actually run an organization, who's not afraid to make deals, who comes from a scouting background, look, to me, if this was your number two choice, there have been a hell of a lot worse number twos that a lot of teams have had to settle on. I don't really think this one is much of a settle at all.
Well, and now you have John Hart stepping down. I guess his title was team president, whether he was actually that or not. Thought his here that that's, this kind of, you know, creates another narrative with Dayton Moore again. Is it seen that way in Atlanta?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, I didn't think Anthopoulos was going to be the general manager. He's got a four-year deal. I didn't think he was going to be the general manager for 4 years. I wasn't really sure how long he'd actually hold both titles. John Hart, it was at the press conference to announce Alex Anthopoulos, it was John Hart effective immediately as a senior advisor, and nobody really knows what that means other than it sounds like a type of job where you get to go play golf and be in Florida more than you're in Atlanta, and you don't have to worry about road trips. So if he stepped down, if that means he's got something else that he wants to do in baseball, whether it's back to the MLB Network or something else he wants to do in terms of a position with the club, I don't think anybody was going to stop him. In terms of Dayton, look, I was here when Dayton was here and then left. Major League Baseball is angry at this team. And with the Boston Red Sox deal last year, they basically said, you know, enough's enough. We understand what goes on, but don't be the biggest offender. And if you believe half of what you read about what happened here with John Coppola, they might have been the biggest offender in the pond. And Dayton Moore would have been the perfect choice. To me, it was like the NCAA thing. You fall on the sword, you sanction yourself, and then you bring in a guy that everybody looks and says, oh, gosh, you got a really good guy on top of everything else. And he could have come in and said, we're not doing business that way. New day dawned, and that would have been great. I don't know if it would have appeased MLB entirely, but I think it would have been a really good hire from a lot of different levels. If the possibility exists where Kansas City is willing to listen, and I don't know if that's the case or not, for compensation for Dayton, I'd still like Dayton to be here in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, that's contractually not necessarily a possibility, it seems, right now.
Well, it seems if they could try to hire him as the president, that is technically an upgrade, and the Chiefs and Royals can't stop him.
So I know it's that way with coaches in the NFL. I don't know if it's that way with front office guys in baseball. I don't. You know, people have said, well, if it's the direct move up, I'm not sure if that's true or not. Because to me, when is a contract not a contract anymore?
Right.
It'd be nice, and I'm not sure. You know, certainly nobody should be speaking for Dayton Moore right now. But at the end of the day, if he came in to run all of baseball and told general managers and told agents, new day dawned, along with Alex Anthopoulos, we're going to do it this way. I'm not a huge fan of the Braves way anymore. They haven't won a postseason series in 16 years. I get what it is in theory. But the 14-year division titles has now been eclipsed by the 16 years of not winning a postseason series. So I've told in no uncertain terms, you can't talk about it that way anymore. If Dayton ends up here, great. If it's Anthopoulos to run it, maybe somewhere in the not-too-distant future hires a GM under him, I can live with that. I just think you have to get back to doing what it is you have to do. I'm tired of hearing about Keith Law and Baseball America telling me how good, you know, the iceberg under the surface is. At the end of the day, the tip that's above water, the 25-man roster, has to be better.
And Georgia gets blown out. They drop to 7. Was this a complete surprise, or was this just the comeuppance and they weren't that good?
Well, look, everybody said the blueprint is to stop them from running. And when you run for 48 yards with arguably the best tandem backfield, it's really hard to win. The fact that they got their ass kicked the way they did was surprising. And the fact that they shot toes off their feet for the entire first half was surprising. At the end of the day, I guess they still control their own destiny. You know, if you win the SEC title, whether it's beating Auburn or beating Alabama, you probably get a chance to be 1 of 4. I can't see any scenario where you wouldn't. But it was eye-opening. I mean, it was eye-opening. That first half, it was mistake here, mistake there. Oh, wait, there's another one, and there's another one. And then it was Kerryon Johnson. You know, their running back was just a beast. And Kentucky and Georgia Tech, to get to that point in the SEC championship game, I've always said, let's find out how you handle adversity. Well, this is the first adversity for this team. Week of practice, game on Saturday. Let's see what they do.
Chris Domino, 790 The Zone. We appreciate the time, always.
All right, Danny, listen, have a really good day.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota.
And in Minnesota, it is one Derek Wetmore from ESPN 1500. Teddy Bridgewater is back from injury, Derek, but they'll stay with Case Keenum. He's been pretty good in his little stint here. But sometimes you think to yourself, the back of the football card might tell more. What's the scenario there in Minnesota right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's question 1A on the mind of Vikings fans, that who do you go with the rest of the season? I think that the prevailing thought is that Case Keenum's been pretty all right. He's done what you needed him to do to get to this point, but are you a Super Bowl team with Case Keenum at quarterback? And that's where the conversation has shifted. It's almost more like now we're expecting the Vikings to make the playoffs, and how do you maximize your potential once you get there? I personally feel like that's with Teddy Bridgewater, but I'm not exactly sure how you handle the switching of the guard when Case Keenum hasn't exactly done anything to lose the job. So, I mean, we're all glued to this situation. It'll be fascinating to see what happens this week against the Rams? If Case plays well, do you keep going with him? If he doesn't play well, is it time to make the switch? I just think the Vikings are going to have to give themselves enough time with Bridgewater in the regular season if they do intend to go with him in the playoffs. You couldn't just throw him in cold. So we'll see how it plays out. But, yeah, this weekend it'll be Case, and maybe he's fighting for his job. Maybe he's not. We're all trying to figure that one out.
Timberwolves are 9-5, but their point differential is just of a 500 team. They are a 500 team on the road, but they've played well in the division. What's been the narrative as far as the T-Wolves are concerned?
Well, Jimmy Butler's been a huge addition for them. He missed a couple of games with the flu, and they just looked like a different team offensively and defensively. We're all still kind of waiting for that Andrew Wiggins come-out party, and Karl-Anthony Towns has gotten a few questions about whether it's defense or whatever. I still think both of those are great young players around which you can build a team, and Jimmy Butler's been a really big addition. Give it some time, I think. Of course, they're doing pretty well in the standings, but there will be ups and downs the rest of the way. I do see them as finally ending their playoff drought this year. That's been the story in Minnesota for a decade. It's just a question of where you're going to be seated, I think, if you're the Timberwolves. And Tom Thibodeau's been a, you know, good executive, good coach, in my personal opinion. And now that they have the horses, like I said, Jimmy Butler, Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, even Jeff Teague's been a nice addition. I still see them as surviving this thing and maybe even being one of the top four seeds in the West this year.
What's the view of Andrew Wiggins? You know, it was talked about here while he was here at Kansas that Bill Self used to use the phrase alpha dog, and he was never that. And, in fact, he just quit in the last NCAA tournament game he played in. And it didn't seem like he wanted to be there. It was a physical game. I think I've always thought that he was going to have to be the, like, third man in a row, not necessarily performance-wise, but leadership-wise and such. And now you do have a couple other players who maybe can garner more attention. Is that the view of him, or is he somewhat stepped forward as far as his alpha personality?
I don't know. Honestly, I still think it goes back and forth, because he'll have some days where you're just disappointed that, yeah, he'll still score. He's still going to get his shots up, and he's a good scorer, and obviously he's good at getting to the rim. But, man, where's the rebounding for a guy his size? And what's the defensive effort consistency? That can ebb and flow. Then again, he's had these days where it's just absolutely takes over a game for quarters at a time, and you see the flashes there. So it's still a mixed bag with Andrew Wiggins, in my opinion. I think he's a frustrating player for some Wolves fans, but he's also a really exciting young player for a lot of other fans. We'll see as far as when the season keeps going here, and you're talking about that alpha dog role, I really expect that to be more of Jimmy Butler's role.
Right.
And even Perfect. To a slightly lesser extent, Karl-Anthony Towns. But to me, Andrew Wiggins is still that great supporting player with upside potential to even get better.
I think on the back of his uniform, he should just wear enigmatic, and that's going to be what he's going to be for his career. The Minnesota Twins, a great breakthrough season for them last year. What's the off-season outlook? Are they literally trying to build on this? Are they staying from within? Where's the mindset?
Well, after covering the Twins the past couple of years, this is going to be an interesting winter, because for the first time, really, you could see them actually being aggressive in the free agent or trade market. They've talked recently, GM Thad Levine's on record, and manager Paul Molitor said on our radio show the other day, they're going to go get a starting pitcher. They're targeting starting pitching. That's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. But I put it this way, after winning 85 games and sort of looking like one of those teams that's on the upswing with a nice young core of position players, I think I'd be surprised if they don't acquire a starting pitcher this winter, whether that's through a big free agent signing or possibly a trade.
Yeah, they definitely look like they're on the uptick. How about the thought with Joe Mauer? He'd been such a disappointment for a few years, and then he really did a good job last year, and his performance in the second half was really showed maybe that the thought would be, well, he just needed to play meaningful baseball, and he kind of came back a little bit. Do they feel like it was a bit of a renaissance for him, or just a flash in the pan?
Yeah, well, I certainly feel that way. I think that the big story, look, Joe Mauer's not that popular of a guy in Minnesota. In fact, I'd argue he's one of the least popular athletes among the fans we hear from on social media. And it's because of the contract. He signed a big mega deal coming off an MVP season, and he just hasn't been the same guy since. But last year, succeeding in a role at first base, I think the biggest thing is his health. He was healthy all year. Paul Molitor used him sort of sparingly at the beginning of the year, would constantly give him some days off, protect him against some tough lefties, and try to keep him fresh. Well, it seems to have worked. Now he's going into the final year this year of that mega contract, so we'll see if he can back it up with another good season of play. But the fact that he rebounded the way he did, I think, took everybody by surprise and was a really probably undersung development for the Twins and why they were able to compete last year.
Absolutely. Derek Wetmore, ESPN 1500, thanks for taking the time.
Sure. Thanks, Danny.
All right. Go to Pete Fox now in L.A. He's from NBC Sports, and I'm looking up at my screen and see three UCLA players at a podium. They are not in China, and they are back. I was thinking the other day when I saw them coming back and the cameras were flashing and everything that this is L.A., and this is a different time for a kid on a college campus. I bet there's a lot of campus people who think it was kind of cool what happened, unfortunately.
Well, I'm not really on campus to hear that, but as far as the overall perception of what went on, there was nobody that was really in favor of it. Nobody thought, hey, that was a good move. That was cool. I mean, maybe differently with their peers on campus, but as far as the big perception of their behavior in China, it was one of the more ridiculous, if not the most ridiculous,
agreed,
decisions that we've seen in a long time. And the fact that the school has only indefinitely,
right,
suspended them has got a lot of people kind of up in arms. Like, why couldn't they come up with something? To me, even at 10 games, which is kind of what everyone seems to think it's going to be, I feel like that's a little shy. It's just the behavior was so ridiculous, and they were warned, don't embarrass us. But I don't think they said specifically, don't shoplift. So, maybe that's their defense.
Maybe they don't think shoplifting is embarrassing. Maybe that's the problem there. So the feeling is there the 10 games would be fair. I'm a little off put by the indefinite as well, because that literally can be anything. There's no definition to it. They have to earn their way back. Well, hell, they can earn their way back in two games, and then you say, well, they did all the right things. Well, that's no consequence.
Well, the thing is that these three guys are not a huge part of the rotation for UCLA.
Right.
Now, LiAngelo Ball is obviously the name that we know more than the other guys. And he's a role player at best, so maybe a sixth man kind of a guy. He's nothing like his brother. So I think a lot of people just assume that because he's Lonzo's brother, he's going to be a star at UCLA and start, and he's not. He's just a bench guy for them. So as to the role of all three of the other two guys, rather, I don't really know how much of an impact they are to the starting rotation, but it doesn't feel like any of these guys are big-time UCLA players.
Let's turn to the Lakers and the Lonzo Ball you just mentioned. He's going to hit the bench at least for a little bit. He's not going to be locked to the bench, but he's not going to start. I've always said that, if a guy is not a good shooter, he can live on confidence and make shots if he's rolling. And that's kind of what happened for him at UCLA. We all know he's got a terrible looking shot, and he's not going to hit shots on a consistent basis. But it's been probably even worse than people anticipated. And it's got to get into his head. And that's the last thing he needed, because he needs confidence to make it with that crummy looking shot. Where's he at?
Well, the fact that Luke Walton has put him on the bench in the fourth quarter the last couple of games, primarily because Jordan Clarkson has been hot, really, you're right, it's not adding to his confidence. But the thing that's been interesting about Lonzo Ball is he's had some good games. He's had the triple-double. He's had some performances where you say, that's what we need to see from him. And remember, he's still a young guy. This is my problem with the one and done. If he was still playing at UCLA, by the time he got to the Lakers, he'd be a considerably more seasoned player. So we all look at this and say, sure, he's not spectacular, but for his age and his development level at this point, he's pretty good. I think the national perspective is they expect so much more from him that when you look at the numbers, you think he's not living up to the expectation of a top draft pick. But the other thing that the Lakers are looking at with Lonzo Ball, and this is kind of becoming an issue, is that they want him to just kind of change the culture, change the pace of play on the court. And some of that stuff is not necessarily indicated through statistics. But what we're seeing is at times when Lonzo Ball goes cold as a shooter, he kind of retracts and his whole game kind of goes into a shell. And that's really a bigger issue. So obviously, there's still a long way to go. There's a ton of development that needs to happen. But at times you see flashes that, hey, this guy could be good. But at other times you're like, you know, he needs to be more aggressive kind of across the board. And there are times when he just, you know, wraps up, you know, packs up shop. And that's, I think, when Luke Walton puts him on the bench.
Pete Fox in L.A., we thank you a lot for taking the time and appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. And we'll continue on next and talk a little MU sports right here on Sports Radio 810.